I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello and welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers. As ever, I am one of the trio of hosts, Stuart Court, and I am joined by Ross Bell, who has spent the last few days trying to recreate that Doug Baldwin catch onto his bed, and the modern-day savant that is Adam Nathan. How are we, chaps? Happier, I'd guess.
Much happier than last week.
Adam?
Amazing what a win can do. Amazing what a win can do.
Most definitely. Before we dive in on this week's pod with a game review of the 49ers game from Sunday, a few of your questions and topics of choice. We'll also be bringing you the second part of our chat with Pam Shepherd and looking at the wider NFL picture and what lays ahead in New Jersey this Sunday versus the New York Jets. But first, a few notes. First off, a massive hat tip to the 25-30 Seahawks fans, mainly locals, who joined Melanie, Madeline and April as they bid adieu to Ian on board the Seattle to Bainbridge ferry this past Saturday. In particular, thanks to Danette, who recorded the whole ceremony on Facebook Live from the boat, which was massively appreciated from those over here who were unable to be there. It was mainly, as I said, a local attendee list and was a great tribute to the big man. Shame we couldn't get more UK representation on the ferry. Also, Marshawn Lynch signed the flag, so whoever's idea it was to get people to leave tributes on the 12 flag deserves a pat on the back, Adam.
Oh, what? Was that me? Was that me?
Oh, the first.
No, it's really cool what's happened to that flag. So, it's great that something so, well, just standard like a flag can be such a trademark to a great man, I guess.
Yeah, most definitely. It's as Marshawn Lynch has took it onto a different level entirely, having someone who was so huge for the franchise the last 5-6 years on. Even squiggle, but it is pretty cool. In Seahawk land, 3 of the first 4 2016 draft picks missed yet another game this past weekend. Jermaine Ifedi, Nick Vinette and CJ Prosise all do look closer to the field this week, but with at least 2 seeming set to feature. Running back Thomas Rawls was dealt some rough news as his leg bruise has revealed itself as a hairline fracture on his shin, I believe.
Ouch.
And he is set to miss the next month at the very least. It's a C-Mike world now. We all just live in it. Mark Christensen wants us to talk about something with 34. Has he asked if Rawls is about to watch his job go to somewhere else, or is that something that's already happening? Adam?
No, I don't think that the days of the bell cow running back are going to be in the NFL for too much longer. If you look at a lot of the good teams and even a lot of the great running backs currently, they're complemented with a change of pace, a different guy. So, you know, Atlanta currently have got Freeman and Coleman. Last year, Martin and Sims were so good together. Mm-hmm. And I think that Rawls is sneakily a pretty good catching back. He made, both of his touchdowns against the 49ers last year came from catching passes and running. So, I don't think we're going to be in a position to have a starter and a second guy. I think that the two of them will be used pretty smartly together.
Yeah, I agree. Ross?
Yeah, full agreement with what Adam said. Either of them can start and either of them can back up the other one without missing the steps. And it's a perfect one too, really.
Yeah, I think it is possible he is losing his job for the little it means on the depth chart. But that started way before he... this hairline fracture with how Michael looked in camp. Obviously, see woke as he was being called on Sunday with all the awakening stuff. But Peter said in the last few weeks that he does prefer the two-back approach. Obviously, he's most successful at SC with Lendale White and Reggie Bush running over all comers. But the biggest thing to me is that it's becoming likelier and likelier by the passing game and injury to our backup running backs. So we get a tone setter in the 2017 draft. Obviously, as I said last week, there were a ton. The running back position in this draft is stacked.
Yeah.
And obviously, Michael just explodes over the next couple of months, but it took him 3 years for a 100-yard game and a touchdown. That's the thing to watch more. than Rawls, as I think that ship could well sail if he continues to have all these nagging injuries. It does just show how otherworldly Lynch was in regards to toughness as well,
yeah.
with how little he missed up until last year, really. Again, Tuesday saw a few minor roster moves with the practice squad shuffled again. Wide receiver Antoine Goodley was released, with running back and 2016 seventh-round pick Zach Brooks was re-signed to the practice squad, along with offensive lineman Robert Myers. Then, last night, something else happened. Something that, if you caught last week's episode, which you all did, obviously, you were forewarned about.
What didn't help was that, you know, bloody Procise injured again, giving us no third down back to speak of whatsoever. You know, one CJ in, this might sound ridiculous, but I was looking at CJ Spiller being given a workout by the Packers, and for a third down back, I think if we're going to lose one CJ, bring another one in, we could do a lot worse.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. And we have a thing with Bills running backs as well.
So. Yeah, it turned out right, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So, Adam, you've got this one.
I mean, I think it's about time I get some, like, money drop music or something, because I'm just straight up bawling. I mean, and I now have officially more bits of breaking news than Ian Rappaport in his whole career. So I'm feeling, you know, NFL Network, get in touch, because I'm ready to go.
But, well, more accurate breaking news.
Yeah, that's also true.
Yeah. So CJ Spiller, what are your thoughts on him now he's a Seahawk, Adam?
I think he is a considerably better passing back than we currently have healthy. We'll probably go on to discuss the Procise situation, but there seems to be quite a bit of suggestion in the Twitterverse that they might be losing a little bit of patience for CJ1, and so they've brought in CJ2, who, if he can stay healthy, we're going to have a good play. I mean, we don't necessarily need someone that's going to be healthy for 14 weeks. We just need someone that can, you know, do a decent job for 3 or 4, and then maybe cover and work with Procise for the other 10.
Yeah. Also, all you need really is someone who can play, what, 25% of snaps? You don't need someone who's going to be first down, second down back, because you've got Michael and Collins, but he's a really nice pickup. The two main things with him is if he can get and stay healthy. Procise or Rules are probably headed to IR to return, or whatever the designation is that year, but give them both extra time to heal, and being able to add someone like CJ Spiller, who apparently had a fair few offers coming to him last week when he was cut by the Saints, and he's held out for a position and setting like Seattle, is pretty cool. Ross?
Well, the Saints are paying his whole salary as well, so he literally had the choice of wherever he wanted to go, he was going to get paid regardless.
Yeah, Ross?
Yeah, very happy with this pickup. He's not that long removed from two 1,000-yard seasons rushing, and he's already, in his best season, he had 500 yards receiving as well. So, yeah, it's a good pickup as a third down back, and he could, if he catches fire, make his way into the rotation for with the other two as well, for the actual running position.
Yeah, most definitely. But yeah, elsewhere, finally, the Seahawks were making headlines for different reasons last week, with Doug Baldwin, Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett using their weekly press conferences to push for changes to police practices, from the 50 state attorneys from Doug Baldwin and Sherman railing against what he sees as the ignored message to sit down, kneel, locked arm protests and stances are trying to communicate. Without going too deeply into the issues at hand at this time, it really is refreshing to see two athletes use their platforms they afforded in such a way. Colin Kaepernick obviously started all this, but to see two of our own do it so admirably, concisely and peacefully is great. Do you agree, Russ?
Yeah, definitely. It needs to be explained in that matter more. People need these people have a lot of influence. Use it for the right means, mostly.
Yeah, most definitely. Adam?
Yeah, I can't add too much to that, apart from just thinking that I was just quite proud of watching them stand up, people that ultimately do represent us, because it's our team. And yeah, I was just pretty proud to see a couple of our guys stand up and have the guts to say what needed to be said. So full marks to them.
Yeah, most definitely. It was, as I said, really refreshing. We don't really see it much over here apart from dodgy dealings over expensive restaurant tables. Now on to our week 3 review. The Seahawks were more like the Seahawks we expected this season. After a quick start, saw a 14 lead within 7 minutes, and the game was never in question from there on. Christian Michael scoring his first two NFL touchdowns, and Doug Baldwin continued to astound and beat Doug Baldwin, and Jimmy Graham started to look like Jimmy Graham.
Russell out of the shotgun. Christian Michael. Russell's going to throw again. Has some time. Steps up. Now he scrambles left. Looks. Throws to the end zone. Touchdown! Seahawks! Jimmy Graham! In the middle of the defense and the middle of the end zone. Wide open. He slams the ball. An 18-yard touchdown reception. And just when it started to look even the least bit bleak, the Seahawks stretch their lead to 20-3.
It was a game, however, which didn't pass without a scare, as an Eli Harold horse collar adjacent tackle saw him fall and crumple up Russell Wilson's legs and left him with an apparent MCL sprain. More on that later. I wasn't the only one whose heart stopped for those few seconds he was on the ground.
Well, I mean, it's not like me to lose my composure at all, but scared as I was also really angry because I just thought it was such a stupid play by Wilson. And in that situation, with the game basically won, playing pointless football, just throw it away. Yeah. I think we're in field goal range anyway. Just get rid of the ball.
Yeah, and he left a clean pocket as well, or relatively clean pocket at the same time. So it was a bit of a silly play, which he put himself in harm's way. Number two quarterback rookie Trayvon Boykin stepped in, and the scoring proficiency the team has showed earlier in the game did not stop, with that man wearing number 89 the main contributor.
Boykin takes the shotgun snap. Here comes the blitz. Quick throw outside. Ball's caught. It's Baldwin down the near sideline. To the five. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. They saw the blitz, and they took advantage of the blitz, and Baldwin turns upfield and scores from 16 yards out, and the Seahawks are blowing this one open, 36-3.
A very cool moment afterwards with Baldwin giving the ball to Boykin to keep, but apparently that isn't the case, as Rookie Hazen sees Baldwin sharing the ball with Boykin, where they have days, alternate days, where they keep the ball, according to Boykin yesterday. Now, to help us talk about the game and through the game is Gavin Hart from the New Forest. Gavin and his wife Selena were at the CenturyLink Field this past weekend amongst a crowd of other UK Seahawks 12s. Gavin, how are we?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you guys?
Good, mate, thank you. Bad.
All good, pal.
Not too bad. So before we get into it, Gavin was in the very cool position of watching the game from club level seats. How was that, and how was the trip overall, Gavin?
The club level seats were fantastic, as you'd expect from that kind of viewpoint. But the weekend overall was just a fantastic weekend. First of all, Seattle's a great city. It's quite a small city, but it's very clean. The people are very friendly. There's lots of things to see and do during the day, and the nightlife is great. So I'm a big fan of Seattle. It's not my first visit. I used to work for Microsoft, so I've been there 6 or 7 times before, but just never during football season. So I'd never seen the Seahawks play at home. So that was good.
Yeah, so how quickly are you going to be booking your trip for next year?
very quickly. I was straight on the internet on the way when I got home to see about flights for other games. I know a lot of people going to the Buffalo game, so
you're right.
I was trying to see about flights for that. Unfortunately, I'm not sure what happened, but certainly that was the first thought on my mind.
it's the strangest drug in the world is a Seahawks game.
But
for you, that was much more like it all round, wasn't it, Gavin?
Yeah, absolutely it was. Yeah, I mean, the game itself was much more, what we wanted to see from the Seahawks, particularly from the offense. We got some offense going. It's particularly encouraging in that, you know, the 49ers defense is not a bad defense. You know, it's one thing to get your offense going against a poor defense, but to get it going against a fairly good 49ers defense was encouraging as well.
The 49ers defense is, I think, it's disregarded for how bad the team is seen. It's just, as Pete Carroll said during the week, it's a different broom in that cupboard now with Chip Kelly there. Ross, Adam, anything to ask Gav?
Yeah, just quickly, Gavin. Obviously, we are a UK-based Seahawk podcast. So tell us about what it was like being someone from the UK, being in Seattle, how people treated you and whatever, because I know Stuart and I have always found that it's just mind-blowing how welcomed you are. So it'll be cool to find out your experience on what it was like for you being, although a regular visitor, still a visitor in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, exactly the same kind of experience that you had. I mean, as I said, I've been to Seattle before myself, so I already loved the city anyway. But travelling there as a 12th man from the UK, we were welcomed with open arms. I met up with a couple of fellow UK Seahawkers, Melanie and April Hardman and Madeline Meeks, who were there to scatter Ian's ashes. So that was a pretty special day for them as well. But you know, wherever we went, we were welcomed with open arms by the locals. They were really friendly. You know, they just treated us like we were lifelong friends, and we were one of them. So the atmosphere, sort of in Seattle, even in the days up to the game, was just amazing. The tailgating before the game was out of this world. If you've not been before, I just can't recommend it enough. Not just the game, but just Seattle itself, you won't be disappointed. It delivers on every front, really. Seattle.
How many fireballs to the nearest 10?
I didn't drink any. I'm pretty much teetotal. I know that probably will disappoint quite a few people, but no. I'm pretty Smart much move. Teetotal. So I didn't drink any fireballs. But I'm sure there were a number consumed by everybody else when we were there. There's definitely certainly a lot of fireball being thrown around, or not thrown around, but being shared around. So
yes. So how did you come? We'll get once again. How did you come to be on club level? Was it a surprise or a raffle win, or did you just decide to go all in on the trip?
Yeah, well, this was our wedding anniversary for myself and my wife. It was our 13th wedding anniversary. But how we got the tickets was kind of a bit of a long story, which I'll make a little bit shorter. Years ago, when I was working for Microsoft, I went to a baseball game, got chatting to one of the stewards at the baseball game. She was from England years ago, and she heard my voice, and we got chatting. She said if I ever came to a Seahawks game that I should hit her up, and she'd see what she could do to sort us out. Bearing in mind this was 7 or 8 years ago, I sent her an email before we went out saying, you probably don't remember me, but we're coming to a game this weekend, can you do anything for us? And lo and behold, she sorted us out properly.
Brilliant.
Wow.
So it was just one of those things, just the luck of the draw, if you like. Got talking to somebody years ago and just following up on that lead.
Yeah, that kind of sums it all up with the hospitality over there, as Adam was mentioning. It just
absolutely
another level. Back onto the game. Chris Baldy wants us to talk about Jimmy Graham. Is Jimmy Graham and Russell Wilson the new Brady and Gronkowski? Ross?
That's a slight leap to make after a 100-yard game. I love Jimmy. He's... Obviously, he's not Gronk, because no one's Gronk. That man's a machine. But Graham is awesome, and we saw him this week. Throw the ball up to him. We said it last week. Throw the ball up, and he'll make the catch. Obviously, it was a free play. It didn't matter. But he still fought two defenders and came down with that ball. And you saw when he scored his touchdown how much that meant. That was an explosive celebration, and my wife went, wow, he's pretty jacked, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's a big man.
He is an absolute unit.
So, I think they could maybe get to that level if give it a few more years, but they're a slight way off just yet.
Yeah, the main thing for me, no, they're not the new Brady and Gronkowski, and it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. That's just a way to get people to sign up for fantasy, it seems.
Brady's the greatest quarterback ever, so, and Gronk's probably the greatest tight end ever. So.
Gronkowski is an absolute... He's an absolute phenom athletically, and was as good as Jimmy Graham was, probably number two to him when he was in New Orleans a couple of years ago. But it just doesn't matter. Let's just enjoy what we got with Wilson, Jimmy Graham, Doug Baldwin, and Tyler Lockett, and don't need to put labels on it. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, the reason I like Seahawks fan is just how grounded we are and how little we get carried away by stuff. So, it really is a privilege to support a I mean, I was just howling when I saw that question. I mean, talk about wishful thinking. If they form half of the relationship that those two guys can have, then we can be more than delighted.
Yes.
Yeah. Gavin?
Yeah, I agree largely with what everyone's saying. I think we don't need Jimmy and, you know, sorry, Brady and Gronkowski. What was most encouraging to me is that they're starting to form a good chemistry. We're not forcing the ball to Jimmy. Last year we seemed to be forcing the ball to Jimmy to get him involved in the game. This year it seems to be much more natural, and that's the encouraging part, is that it's just starting to happen now rather than it being forced.
Yeah, you can't.
So yeah, I think they'll move on to, you know, to do some big things, but yeah, Brady Gronkowski's is a bit of a reach.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Obviously, elsewhere on offense, he's somehow getting all that money he's getting, doing what he's doing for the last year and a bit. He's still underrated. Doug Baldwin is moving up. He's moving up the rankings. He's
incredible.
He's phenomenal. Adam, do you want to take this for your boy?
Well, he's my favourite player, as you well know. And apart from maybe throwing the ball up into the corner and asking him to fight off two defensive backs to bring it down, what can't he do?
No.
That catch is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
If that was Odell Beckham, that would be all over the media, all over everywhere, saying, oh, the greatest catch, blah, blah, blah.
It's just another level to Doug Baldwin. I think we've probably underappreciated in the last couple of years just for how good, because he was just always there. But I think the thing with Doug Baldwin this year is he stepped up as off the field, especially now.
Yeah.
Obviously, you saw him, he was in Russell's ear when he was trying to come in and come back in after his knee was turned sideways. But yeah, he's a special
leader,
player,
isn't he?
Most definitely. Gavin, Doug Baldwin?
Yeah, I mean, again, one of my son's favourite player, certainly one of my favourite players. As you say, he's kind of snuck under the radar for a few years, but because we've opened the passing game up in the last year or two, he's started to come to the fore. And as you say, I just don't think there's a great deal he can do apart from the jump ball because of his lack of size, obviously, but that's not his fault. But pretty much anything else Doug Baldwin's capable of doing. And actually, I think the best catch of the day was the deep post pan on the... on one of the scoring drives, you know, just a huge play that turned the field for us and made a big difference.
The 58-yarder.
Yeah, that was the one. Yeah, certainly from in the stadium. You know, that was definitely the one that kind of that really jumped out as a big play. I mean, the one-handed grab was a fantastic grab, but that's just one of those kind of freak plays. But the 58-yard, you know, the deep post was just a thing of beauty to watch from the stadium.
Yeah, that 58-yard completion was the moment I realised I made a mistake in playing Tyler Lockett in fantasy because he wasn't going to get much catches, because that's what you expect to see Tyler Lockett. Christian Michael, C. Woke, as I mentioned him earlier, people are calling him. This awakening's fun, isn't it, Ross?
Yeah, isn't it just? That first run, well, the 41-yard touchdown run, that was incredible. It looked like I've never seen a man run so fast. He was through that gap and into the backfield in no time at all. Barring the couple of the turf monsters that he occasionally falls foul to, just falling over, he's amazing. That 1 yard loss, that spin, that was amazing.
There is something with Christian Michael. I think Adam noticed it, saw it on Twitter. Nathan Ernst, he has a weird... He waved his arms like he was a cartoon character when he tried to turn the corner. And it's just like... it looks weird. It's quite funny because obviously he wasn't injured. He didn't do anything negative. But what's he doing? And obviously he got his ball security. But don't wave your arms like you're Wile E. Coyote or someone. Christian Michael, Adam?
Yeah, he reminds me of, you know, those old school arcade pinball machines where you've got the bottom right, you pull the thing down, let it go. That's what he looks like when he gets the ball in his hand. I can't really remember seeing anyone quite like him with that immediate burst. I'm sure there have been many that I can't think of off the top of my head, but he's just fun to watch, and it's just nice to see a guy who just smashes into whatever there is, and if there's a body or not, it doesn't matter to him.
Yeah, most definitely. Gavin, Christian?
Yeah, I think he's been a real story, isn't he, from obviously being let go last year and refinding himself. And at the moment, he's running the ball like a man possessed. He sees the holes well. He's a little unwieldy at times, as you say, with his kind of strange motions. But I guess when you cut and you change direction in the way that he does, you've got to compensate your balance with arm movements and things like that. So, but yeah, I mean, I think the way he's running at the moment, I don't think Rawls has got a is going to get a he'll get a chance. He'll get a look, but if C Mike keeps doing what he's doing, then he's going to be the man for the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah, most certainly. The offensive line was better. Bradley Sowell didn't get as many head starts this week. Mark Glinski is really, really good. Justin Britt was probably the weakest link of the lot. Jamarcus Webb actually looked like a serviceable player. And Gary Gilliam is Gary Gilliam. Is that a fair assessment, Adam?
Yeah, they started well, but there were still a few holds and whatnot. I think they took a step forward. But ultimately, that's not really asking too much, considering the complete
the starting point
crap show that the Rams game was. They were better, and if they steadily get better, then there'll be no complaints. But I still, they're not there yet by a long shot, and I think we're going to be in for a bit of a rude awakening on Sunday, I have to say.
I think we'll get someone like the Jets defensive front, and they got the linebackers as well, just a different level to the Niners. A little context. Last year, with our messages back and forth, me and Adam were the only two, probably, on the Mark Glinski MVP wagon because of the one performance he gave in Arizona and all that. But as I said to him, Adam, on Monday or Tuesday, we were a year early. We really were, because he looks a very, very good player at left guard. Steve Hutchinson, maybe in a few years, but maybe that's a Brady Gronk jump.
Gronkowski reach, easy, I think, but yeah.
But one can dream. the third down explosive plays were pretty cool. Third downs with 14 and 17 yards to go. Saw a 58-yard completion to Doug, which obviously Gavin mentioned earlier, and set up the Jimmy Graham touchdown. That play looked familiar, didn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it did. We were talking about it earlier about letting a guy, I think with the Sidney Rice play against the Jags we were talking about, throw it up, let your big man go and get it, fly like an eagle, and he was there. And it was just, there was a question on the group saying, should we have made the trade for Graham and Unger, which I'm pretty sure everyone's dealt with 760,000 billion trillion times. But all I'll say is that Max Unger could never make a play that jump off the couch in the same way as Jimmy Graham could. And ultimately, sport is supposed to be about enjoyment, and the pure joy I got from that play, you can take your X's and O's and park them on this one, because, yeah, I'm taking Jimmy Graham all day, every day.
And the joy, as Ross said earlier, that Jimmy got from it as well, because that was a pretty...
It was awesome.
It was pretty cool. Ross?
Yes, they're on their way.
The third down plays? Yeah, definitely. Well, Gavin, you had a question regarding Cam Chancellor.
Yeah. I mean, so my thoughts were, and I actually made this as one of my bold statements on the UK Seahawkers Facebook page before the season, was do we think that Cam Chancellor is going to be a spent force this year? And kind of what I've seen so far, I'm kind of thinking I might be right. He's not terrible, don't get me wrong. But he's not the dominant, domineering, all-powerful player that he used to be two or three years ago.
No, he isn't, apart from when, as Ross tweeted on Sunday, apart from when it's against San Francisco 49 tight
ends.
Yeah,
he did give Vance McDonald a little bit of a wake-up call, I'll give you that much, yeah.
Well, he managed to injure both of their tight ends on Sunday. So, Ross, Cam Chancellor?
Yeah, he's not at that level of 2013. He was the best safety in the whole league then. He's dropped off slightly since then, but he's still a valuable commodity. But if that trade we've all seen floated this week, the possibility of him plus a pick for Joe Thomas, I would take that. That would be something that would interest me, definitely.
Well, that's interesting. I haven't seen... Obviously, Joe Thomas...
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Sorry.
The Joe Thomas thing is the money we'd have to pay him. It's just there's only so much cap room. We need to play players...
Yeah, I think if Cam's going the other way, it kind of works out all right for us.
I'm not too sure, to be honest.
But I've only just bought my wife a Cam Chancellor jersey, so let's not trade him away.
Adam, Cam Chancellor?
I mean, apart from the odd seam to a tight end, which is going to be just something that plagues us for forever and a day, those long plays are still pretty much a no-fly zone, and even if Chancellor isn't playing at his absolute best, he still currently has enough of a fear factor about him that teams aren't really testing us vertically. So I thought he was better on Sunday, and I think the aura of him, you know, he got made a team captain, so there's obviously something there that people like, that's still there. So I'm not going to write him off just yet. Let's see how the season pans out.
Yeah, when we're talking about no-fly zone, there's a few people, I can't remember who it was in particular, talking about, I think it's Dave Bailey, talking about Earl Thomas. I just don't see the issue. Obviously, he was very, very bad against the Dolphins, but so was most players yeah. the first 2 weeks of the season. Yeah. As Adam says, all the lack of long balls that this defense has got since Earl Thomas has been in the team is just ridiculous. He's someone you don't realize how good he is until you probably in that stadium. I don't know if Gavin, you noticed it on Sunday, how much he flies around the field in like 15, 20 yards away from play. I just don't see it. I just don't see the thing with him, and what I just don't see a decline in him at all. Adam?
I don't think you can see it, Stu, but from what I can see, the thing about Thomas is that he is so good that any little slip up seems like a catastrophe. In the same way, like Richard Sherman at some point is going to give up a touchdown this season, and the whole internet is going to go into a complete meltdown. Patrick Peterson will be better. Marcus Peters is the new kid on the block. Maybe old Revis is still better. Deion Sanders is still better than Richard Sherman because he gave up a touchdown. But the problem is these guys set themselves such a high standard that even the slightest drop-off looks like a complete catastrophe. It's the same with Chancellor to an extent, although his may be more of a permanent thing perhaps. But you've got to trust these guys. It's been the top-scoring defense for 3 or 4 years in a row in the NFL. And until we see some, you know, real traits over 3-4 months, I'm not willing to write anyone off.
Yeah, definitely. Gavin?
Yeah, I think I've got two things really about Earl Thomas. The first one is that he's like an insurance policy. You know, you never see it, you never think about it, you never do much about it until you need it, and when you need it, it's there. And you know, that's kind of what Earl Thomas is. He's, as you both said, you don't see the drop-off because he's just not being challenged. I think there's a little bit of panic because he missed a few tackles that he would normally have made in the Dolphins game. So, you know, there's kind of thoughts of decline. As you just said, though, I think we need to see him over the course of a longer period of time to be able to say whether he's on the decline or not. But I don't see it personally. But the other point I was going to have, and you know what some people have said, is he's just signed a mega deal contract. Is this him on the backside of that mega deal contract now, thinking about keeping himself healthy and not playing to that level of, you know, that players do when they're in a contract season? That's not how I see it, but that's how some people will talk about it, I think.
Yeah, no, I don't see that at all. If you watch and listen to Earl Thomas talk and how tuned in he is and how focused, like, different level of focus he has to everything on social media and everything, he is just, there is no one like Earl Thomas. I said earlier, this is Christian Michael world and we all live in it. No, it's an Earl Thomas world and we all live in it. He's on a different sphere at times with how focused he is. Also, Gavin, that is an all-world analogy as well with the insurance policy.
Yeah, it's great.
I really do like that one. Adam, contract with Earl Thomas?
No, I'd give that even shorter shrift than the Gronk-Brady comparison, to be honest.
Yeah, most definitely. But another thing that caught up on the group when we asked for questions and topics, and it was a focus from certain people on Sunday, the lack of turnovers and aggression from the defence, is it a concern? Adam?
Right. Rant incoming.
Oh,
it was 37-3 for the portion of the game that actually mattered. What more can you possibly want? Right, hang on, because I'm really getting angry now.
So I got a catfish button, really.
If a team only concedes 3 points in the NFL, these guys are much more physical than we could ever imagine a human being to be, and the same for competitive nature. It's 37-3 against a team that have scored 55 points already this season. What more do you want? We're not going to force turnovers because people aren't going to throw balls up for our defensive backs to get, because we have proven to be the best at that over 3 years. Look at the pick numbers of Sherman. They're gradually on the decline for that reason. What more do you want than stopping the run, forcing long third downs, and then basically every single time stopping them on third down? I mean, complaining about the defense, I don't know, is like being annoyed at winning the Euro Millions lottery and only being 100 million and not 110, because I just don't get it at all.
I think that's Adam trying to get back in the analogy game after Gavin.
Yeah, one all, Gavin.
Laying down. it's just absolute madness. For me, they are more aggressive this year than they were last year. I think Chris Richard deserves a hell of a lot of credit for how he's got that defense pairing, especially as Adam mentioned last week with Frank Clark and how they're using him. Yes, they didn't get any sacks or all that sort on Blaine Gabbert, but Blaine Gabbert was getting the ball out before he turned around. Look at that first play. Yeah. He ran the ball for half a yard because he was petrified. And that was the first play. Yeah, he didn't know where his running back was, because that's what happens when you are on the 25-yard line in the middle of the CenturyLink field with 67,000 baying Seattleites and UKers this weekend. That's what happens, and it's just absolute barmy. We absolutely should shut down that team. They got 224 or 34 yards on Sunday. They had 112 yards with entering the fourth quarter before those final two drives. 112 yards against the team, as Adam said, put up points against a Rams team that we didn't put anything up against the Carolina Panthers defense, which is still, although it's not as good as it was last year, is still at a high level, and we shut them down to 3 points and 112 yards in three quarters of football. Ross, anything to add with the defence and aggression and turnovers and all that?
Well, the aggression's there, and if you want turnovers, we're playing Ryan Fitzpatrick this week. No, we did last week.
Yeah, Gavin, anything with the turnovers?
Yeah, I think turnovers, there's two sides to turnovers. Obviously, you can't intercept the ball if it's not thrown. So there's certainly that side of things. You know, I can understand why our turnovers on that side are down. I still think we're not stripping the ball as much as we used to. You know, a lot of our interceptions came on big tackles, you know, Cam Chancellor getting in on Adrian Peterson and ripping the ball out, those kind of plays that we're not seeing as much of thus far this year. But, you know, ultimately, as you've already alluded to, if you're letting in 3, 6, 9 points a game, do we really need turnovers?
No, exactly. Cause
that's what it comes down to. The defence is there to stop the other team from scoring, and if they do that through making them punt, that's, to me, you know, equally
turnover.
There's no
team like the Seahawks over a 4-year stretch to what we've seen in the last 4 years on the defensive side of the ball. The last team to get close was the 1951 Cleveland Browns before there was even in the AFL, whatever it was, back in the 50s. There is, in the modern NFL era, there is no defense performing at a level the Seahawks have the last 4 years. And as with Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor's play, it's taken for granted. And that is just something to bash it with. Jackson Bevins put in his Cigar Thoughts article on Sunday, over the first 3 weeks, the passing yard and touchdowns allowed by the Seahawks defense has been 150, 219, and 119 yards with zero touchdowns given up. You cannot ask for anything more than that at all. Moving on, obviously, as always, we do want to praise on each side of the ball. Adam, want to praise a little bit more on offense?
Oh, my goodness, that is a really good question. We haven't actually spoken about him. I thought until he got injured, Wilson looked really good. The throws were a lot more accurate. He had a nice little keeper to make a first down, which made me feel very good about his ankle until obviously knee gates came into play. But just the accuracy, velocity of his throws was just, it was different gravy to the week before.
Yeah, definitely. Ross?
Yeah, all the obvious ones we've already mentioned. So I want to give a little shout out to Tanner McAvoy, that block.
I knew it'd be McAvoy.
Yeah. That block for that Christian Michael touchdown run. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Get him on the offensive line.
I think someone predicted that he might be. Last week that we might save someone from him. I don't really want to
his ego anymore.
Yeah, it's
impossible, mate. It's already capacity.
Gavin, anyone in particular on offense?
Well, I think on Sunday, obviously Christian Michael was the person that stood out for me on Sunday. But who I'm excited to see going forwards is CJ Procise when he gets healthy. I think he can be a big player for us on third down. And also, I'm excited to see how Jermaine Ifedi changes our offensive line.
Most definitely. So, just a quick question. I listened to another podcast a few weeks ago when Ndamukong Suh stepped on Wilson, no one in the stadium noticed. Did you know in the stadium that Wilson was hurt?
Yeah, you could see by, I mean, obviously, you know, when you're in the stadium, unless you're in the front rows, you're a relatively long way away from these things, so you don't see live, at least, you know, how bad things are. But you could see by the way, you know, just from the angle and the way he fell and the way the tackle was made, that, you know, that there was something not right. And, you know, the whole crowd went silent. I don't know if when that was
there was a hush on the TV.
Joint groan sort of thing, you know, it was... Pretty much everyone realised that it just didn't look right in the stadium. I'm actually not sure it was a horse collar tackle, personally, but the flag was thrown. I'm not going to complain about it. If you watch the replays, he grabs his shirt, but doesn't actually go inside the pads. So, I'm not sure that was necessarily a penalty.
Yeah,
but there was a general understanding that wasn't good, that, you know, that something had happened. It wasn't a standard tackle within the stadium.
Okay, I just thought I'd get your POV on that. Gavin, defence, one to put praise?
I think Reed in the middle of the line. I think, he's starting to do a good job for us, stuffing the run and filling those big shoes that Brandon Meadbain and those guys left behind.
Yeah, Ross?
We don't mention him much, but Bobby Wagner. Luke Kuechly gets all the love as the best linebacker in the NFL, but Wagner's... If Kuechly's one, Wagner's 1B.
Yeah.
He's in the backfield all the time, and if he's not, he's tackling everyone that comes near him.
Yeah, we'll get onto it later, but him and KJ are big this week as well with how the Jets look to attack. Adam on defence?
Ross, the chip on your shoulder is just enormous. You're just taking shots at anyone in the NFL that gets a good rep these days.
Keighley's brilliant, don't get me wrong.
I thought the linebackers were really good. I really love watching them when they're flying around the field like that, and they were top class.
Yeah, most definitely. For me on defense, I think it's the three cornerbacks. So Sherman obviously was as he was. And through 3 weeks, he's had 94 snaps, 23 yards allowed, which is just absolutely balmy. That's like less than, 0.2 yard per snap, I think that is. But he's been phenomenal. But, the three, Sherman especially, he nearly had an interception on where he just absolutely flew through the air and just read the quarterback and the route all the way through. So Richard Sherman for me.
I thought that was a pick until the replay.
Yeah.
Everyone in the stadium did, actually, yeah. Everyone in the stadium thought it was a pick. The angle that we had, or at least from either side of the field I was on, we were all celebrating like it was a pick.
But definitely, it's coming. As it was last year, it's coming for Sherman. Anything on concern quickly on either side?
Not really, to be honest. No. I mean, the Niners didn't show us much, did they? So.
No. Gavin?
My only concern, I think we need to get a bit more pass rush going. We need to, we need to be harassing quarterbacks a little bit more. I agree, Gabbert got the ball out quickly on Sunday, but in the previous games, the QBs were allowed to stand back there for a bit too long, for my liking. So that's something I'd like to see. And obviously, just creating some fumbles.
Yeah, I think the thing with getting to the quarterback, some of it with the Seahawks is... scoreboard pressure. We haven't really... This week we had it, but they still maintained. They started running the ball, which was strange. They still obviously score from it, but I think scoreboard pressure is huge for the Seahawks and getting to the quarterback because they have to throw it. And when you got... what do you call himself? Optimus Prime, which is Sherman outside. Yeah. When you went against Megatron, the interceptions, everything are going to come. Before we move on, just that's all we got. With Gavin, we really do appreciate you coming on and sharing your point of view from CenturyLink Field. I hope to see you out there next September, October. I'm glad you had a good time, and thank you very, very much for taking the time out of your day and joining us.
You're more than welcome. Thanks, guys. And yes, you'll definitely see me out there again at some point, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Cheers, Gary.
Thanks, guys.
One more question on last week. This comes from Mark Jackson, one of the North reps for the chapter. He asked if we see any perceived changes in the offense, player development, roster moves, or style changes, noting how Wilson's current health will impact us. It is a good question, with 1 week of the offense doing anything of note, and leads into something Adam will probably want to mention. Jermaine Curse's usage. $13 million deal, or whatever it was, in March, and he only saw the ball when... a rookie quarterback needed a security blanket. Adam, does Curse fall into that category of the lack of development and the roster moves and the change in style with Curse?
Well, I mean, he's not going to get cut, and I guess he got his contract as much for his what he brings from a mentality point of view with Baldwin as an experienced guy. But, you know, obviously my views on giving him a contract are well-documented, and how you look at where that money could be better spent on the offensive line, it makes me feel ill. But, yeah, I think probably the signing of CJ Spiller is quite an important one. They obviously don't want Wilson dancing around in the pocket on third down looking for something. And so to have a nice hot route to go to an experienced catching back, maybe that helps with the injury. But I don't know. I mean, they're not signing any veteran quarterbacks, so either they don't feel it's going to be too much of a problem, or they have a faith that I don't think should be there in Trevon Boykin.
Russ, curse, usage, development?
9 receptions for 80 yards this season. His that role many? Was very, very his role's very much defined now, isn't it? That you're the fourth or fifth option in his offense.
Yeah, especially with Jimmy Graham back. It's as you said, with the offensive line looking as it does and looking a bit sparse in the cap hit. It's a bit of a strange one. Just staying on Boykin, as Adam mentioned, I thought he was fine. Obviously, the interception he threw was very, very bad because it's just a no-look throw and interception. But he was fine. I think Bradley Sell said yesterday he was surprised and impressed by how calm he was when he come into that situation. Obviously, being 34 points up when he come into the game does help that.
He was standing in the pocket, willing to take some hits when the pass rush
was coming. I think he was fine. I think the read option could be really something to watch if he does have to play on Sunday, which I don't think he will. But I think he was absolutely spot on. I think he's quite excited as well that we've got no veteran quarterbacks coming in because of how they clearly see him.
I saw that interception described as a rookie's going to rookie, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that's pretty much a good way to put it. Adam?
Well, I guess we're going to have our Wilson starts it discussion at some point, but...
Yeah.
I still think he's way off being ready to be an NFL quarterback. I mean, that pick, which barring a great tackle from McAvoy is a pick six, is a really bad throw at a time where you just don't need to make it. And, you know, San Francisco, especially on defense, had all but given up at that point. And I just worry that it's too early for him to come in and start a game.
Yeah. I think it will be a lot on Darrell Bevell and how he game plans him, if it is needed either this week or in week 5, depending on how Wilson is. Because that is the biggest thing. We just game plan him, which was quite clear. They did it on the fly on Sunday, and Gracie just said to him, if Doug's open, throw the ball. Yeah. The ball, which was intercepted, I think was targeted for Tanner McAvoy, which is, they have no rapport. They have 3 weeks of work over the summer. Yeah. So, and Doug Baldwin knows this offense like the back of his hand and all that stuff. So I'll be a bit more pessimistic if he does start, but I'm fully happy with Boykin being QB2 for the Seahawks this year. Moving on, before we get into what awaits this week in New Jersey, the second part of our sit down with Pam Shepherd. If you missed last week, myself and the chapter president Sean Wilson sat down with Pam, who started the first UK Seahawks fan group in 1981. In the first part, she told us how it got started and how amazing it was to see how far it had come and how much it had grew into its current shape in that bar in Birmingham in 2016. This week, though, we get one of Pam's many great stories involving an LA hotel and Kenny Easley.
Well, in 2004, we went out, Jeff and I alone this time, for another 5 weeks, purely because we've now set up a really good liaison with the Seahawkers, and they wanted us to meet them on the day of the game between them, the Seahawks and the Raiders. So they asked if we could meet them at the Hyatt Regency in Los Angeles. So we took our travels and shipped it back into the schedule so that we got to the Hyatt Regency the day before the game. And they were going to travel down, they were flying, it's 1,500 miles down that coast. And then when we got there, first thing, they were bad and arrived. So Shep said, let's book it. And he said, and then we can always come ask the guy to let us know when they're here. So we went to book in, and I think we just went up to the desk and said, is it possible to have a room for the night? Yes. He said, well, we do have one. He said, where are you from? I said, no, they're British. Oh, that's okay. So you can go on the fourth floor. He said, only we can't get anybody else up there. He said, because that's where the team are staying. Can you imagine me? I just about to say something, Jeff. I might be. I mean, oh, no, yes, that's fine. We got him down in the same floor as a team. Can he use them? So anyway, we were up in the lift. Got out on the fourth floor, and I met with this biggest man I've ever seen in my life. And he was one of the what they call them, bouncers, get a man with him. No, they're not allowed on this floor. And there was five of them, all sitting outside various doors, in between the doors, you know, to stop anyone getting up there. And he just said to us, no, sorry, guys, you've got to get out. He said, this floor's restricted, only us. So Shep said, well, he said, this is our room. He said, well, where are you guys from? So Shep said, oh, we're British. Oh, I said, that's okay then. He said, because these are the guys, he said, from, you probably never heard of them, called Seahawks. Shep said, no, he said, what's that? It's like baseball or something. So we're both blagging our way through this. Got into our room, and we literally, in our 40s, were going, yeah, yeah. Do we tell the girls downstairs? And then, of course, you know, we had the call to say the girls have arrived, the club, you know, went down, and first time we'd met any of them. So from getting in touch with them by letter, that was the first. And Dorothy Nelson was a big lady, very big lady, more than one way, a boomy voice. And her husband was a little tiny stitch. Yeah, and she just found him out every time he went to speak. She said, oh, shut up, Jeff, I've got to talk to this lady. God, don't mess with Dorothy, don't mess with her. So that was basically it, you know. So we went down, met them, and had something to eat with them. I thought, well, I'll have a sandwich because I was so excited I couldn't really eat. And I thought, I'd have a sandwich and call it a club. And then the lift doors open, and these wonderful men came out. These were my Seahawks.
And was Mr. Easley there, by any chance?
He came over to me, because he'd seen Dorothy, because they know him. And Dorothy had said that we were coming, the team that we were going to meet them later in the week and get our affiliation documents. And he came straight over, and he started talking to me, and he took my hand, and I lost it. I just great big light sort of came and told my God. And he was a giant man. And we got talking, and I was asking him questions, and he was telling me. And then I went a bit quiet because I was in awe of him. And he said, man, can you keep talking? He said, I just love that. And he called two of his mates over, and he said, come listen to her talk. Come and listen to her. So why can't we talk like this? It was so funny.
So do you have any memories of going to the Kingdom? Obviously, it's not there anymore.
No, I never got there. Because that was the 1981. When we went in 84, we sat outside there. I never saw a game there. Because the game that we went to after the hire, almost the next day to the game, was the 9th of January game that year. Vegas.
At the Coliseum.
500 Seahawkers. 91,500 Vegas. Wonderful odds. Wonderful odds. And I did get it because when the coach arrived to take us all from the hire, it was driven by quite a short little lady. She looked quite innocent. And I thought, oh, that's all right, it's not so bad. There's no sanitism in this place because the Raiders didn't have a very good reputation. Mm-hmm. So before we left, she said, right, guys, I'm going to take you to the Coliseum. She said, and I'll give you your instructions when we get there. So we go off. We go down to the Coliseum. And before she opens the gate, she stands up. And when she stands up, she's got this big truncheon. And then I could see a host poking out. So I thought, oh, what's this? So he said, now listen up. You go out of this coach, you walk across the concourse, you get through that gate, you go down to your seat and you don't move. You don't move till the end of the game. And when the end of the game comes, you move pretty bloody quick. Because if they win or lose, they're going to kill you. So I got the game. So, I mean, I did. I could outrun anybody there. So I outrun everybody. I was first one to get to the game. And she said, right, once you're quick, and I'm quick. Oh, God, it was so scary.
So do you still follow the team now?
I love it. I get my information now from whoever's got Gizmo, which is mainly my son. You've sent your ring me up. I mean, he keeps me in touch with it. And apparently, I think he went on, I don't know, he told me, he went on once, one of these books. Kenny Easley was on there talking. So he then went back and got in touch with him. And he said, I don't know whether you remember us. He said, but we were there in the 1984, you know. And bless him. He said, he remembered my mom. I said, well, you tell him I remember him.
And next year, it looks like you might be going to the Hall of Fame.
And you're just waiting for your invitation, I would guess. Yes.
Hall of Fame. Well, if he doesn't get it, it's going to be hell. No, he was and still is. And, I mean, he would be. But, I mean, they don't treat their athletes very well. He was just filled with drugs to keep him on his legs. Yeah. And it's had the most horrendous effect on him. And, you know, I feel so sad. And I heard once, it was one of the newspaper cuttings that Dorothy sent us back then. And it was about the Easleys, the family, and about the bad and how the neighbours they had living in this white community didn't want them in there and how that was reacting on his game. Mm-hmm. I wrote to him via the Seahawks and I said, look, don't put up with it. You come and stay with us. I was so heartbroken. I don't think you're treating that. You know, I mean, there was a lot of it goes on in those days because, I mean, that, and, you know, so I did, I felt really sorry for him. I did that and that's it. I never saw him.
So it's the next year he's in the Hall of Fame. You'll be on the first flight out to Canton.
Yeah? If I'm still alive, I would love to.
Yeah.
I really would.
I'd just like to thank you for taking the time and sharing some stories. Oh, it's amazing. Really interesting.
I tell you something. I would like to thank you, especially you two. Mama Hawk.
Yeah.
That's what we said. Mama UK Hawk. It's perfect.
I'm going to tell everyone. I'm going to bore them with this. Because they said, are you going to get on? I said, I don't know until I get there. You should be. I've had the most wonderful day today. Thank you all for inviting me. And I just can't tell you. I'm going to miss you.
Very cool story, and excitement she still talks about Mr. Easley with was very cool to see. Let's hope she gets to see him as a Hall of Famer next summer. Quick thanks to Pam for the chat and Gavin and Deb for the help in arranging it and getting everyone and Pam especially obviously to Birmingham. It was very much appreciated. I hope you enjoyed the chat and listening back to it as much as we did talking to her. Now on to week four, the pre-bye week game. Never has a week five bye been more welcome than this one. The team are travelling to New Jersey in the scene of their Super Bowl 48 victory to face Ryan Fitzpatrick and the New York Jets. The Jets went from a high-powered offense in week two to Fitzpatrick throwing a mind-boggling six interceptions. Six! In what Pro Football Focus have rated the worst quarterback performance in their existence against the Chiefs.
Really worth chasing them all summer, wasn't it?
Oh, amazing. Unsurprisingly, the Jets did lose 24-3 to Kansas City. They now sit at 1-2 as ever, with the AFC having completely screwed the pooch in trying to catch New England and push them off their perch. But, Adam, this is going to be a tough out despite all of that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't call the Jets a trap game because they have a lot of good players. So, yeah. And yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they made the playoffs. But everything about this game just doesn't sit well with me. If you look at how we spoke after the Rams game, and actually if you think about it, you'd almost rather play a team after a good win than an embarrassing loss. Yeah. These guys are so competitive that after an embarrassing loss, the last thing they want to do, especially coming home, is do the same and stick up another, you know, stink fest in front of their own fans. And I think with the six picks, they're going to be much more poised and calmer in the past game. The defense are going to want to show up because they put up more points than they should be, and I'm just worried that this is going to be a really hard game.
Yeah, to be fair, on the defense didn't do that badly. The 24 points Kansas City came off, 14 of them came off a pick six and a fumble return on a kickoff. So that's 10-3 basically in offense v defense terms. So the defense is purring. Obviously, they've got Todd Bowles, who was in Arizona for a few years and caused us a few scares and all that over his time there. Ross, it's going to be a tough one on Sunday, yeah?
It will be. It'd be tough for Wilson. So a lot of running, I think. But then they've got a stacked offensive front. The one weakness I can see, and he's had a fantastic career, but Revis is not the same man he was. He's been beaten quite a lot by
quick
receivers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just put Tyler Lockett on him all day, all game.
Yeah, the matchup is defensively is a bit scary. Their defensive line is another impressive looking one, Adam.
Well, it's not worse than the Rams. That's what you have to say. I mean, in terms of playmakers, you got Wilkerson, Leonard Williams, and the third guy who's a star whose name escapes me.
Sheldon Richardson.
I mean, they are absolute ballers. Yeah. And this is going to be such a huge step up in class from last week's defensive line that we faced, that it's a huge ask for the offensive line. And this is where you can tell whether they have made a step up or not, because this is going to be a slugfest.
Yeah, definitely. And especially with the early start and everything that goes into it. So a few different matchups we're going to have to face. Matt Forte is their running back. He started off the season quite well. He had 3 touchdowns in the Thursday nighter against the Bills, I think it was.
Yeah.
Colorless game with Rex Ryan basically just throwing the towel and sacked everyone in sight. But is that, when I saw Matt Forte, I thought he was quite a bit of a Seahawks killer, but I've looked into it. Over his 5 or 6 games he's had over his 9-year career, he averages just 18 rushes a game, 3 receptions, just under 60 yards rushing yards a game. It's in the air where he's got 41 receiving yards on average, with 2 touchdowns on, or 1 on the ground and 1 in the air. He's not much of a Seahawks killer as I thought, but he's still someone to watch out for. And as we mentioned, KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner, they're going to be big with all the screen game and all the dump-off passes to him. Russ?
Yeah, he's... It's a tough one, because he is probably the best third down back in the whole league, but he plays every down.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they got rid of Chris Ivory, so it's going to be a tough ask for the defensive line to keep him in check. But then, obviously, yeah, you need the linebackers to play as well as they always do to just stop him from getting his yards, but then you've got their wide receivers as well, which is...
Yeah, they are near a basketball team, wide receivers. Yeah. They even added Austin Severian Jenkins, the tight end.
He's a big bugger.
Who, as Adam can attest to, is one of the biggest human beings I've ever met. He is huge. Absolutely got out of the car at the tailgate before the Huskies game. He towered over his 4x4, I think he did. But yeah, the big guys that wide receiver, Eric Decker's had an MRI on his shoulder, so that's something to watch before Sunday. Brandon Marshall, they've got Quincy Enunwa and Jalen Marshall, I think, is a young player. It's an interesting matchup with Sherman and Sheldon Lane at wide receiver. Adam?
Yeah, it will be. I'm just hoping that we have enough big guys to cover their big guys, as you know, basic as that sounds. But, you know, we were talking about the pass rush against San Francisco earlier and whatnot. In games like that, you don't really need much of a pass rush, because your coverage is going to be good enough that you can probably stop the passing plays.
Yeah.
So conversely, in a weird way, when you're playing better receivers, you sort of need a better pass rush. So I expect us to be much better up front and dial up a few more blitzes, because really what you want to do is take Fitzpatrick back a week and put him back into panic mode.
Yep.
Make him throw some sloppy ones. We're not going to sit off and let him pick his spot, because that is when he is a decent quarterback.
Yeah, and he's survived in the league for 7-8 years at a few different spots, admittedly, but he's a better quarterback than what we've seen probably the last 2 weeks, most definitely. I think he's better than Keenum. He's probably close to Gabbert at times because of 6 interceptions and all that, but the wide receivers are a worry. Brandon Marshall was clearly not healthy. He was on the field for most of the game on Sunday, but I think he had 2, maybe 3 catches, and he didn't do anything. Eric Decker is going to be a massive, massive loss for them if he's not, because he can do everything for that team. Brandon Marshall is a little bit more limited in the Indian summer of his career, but Eric Decker, if he's missing from that game, that's a big win for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
It's another big test for the O-line, isn't it? Obviously, Jermaine Ifedi might be back, Ross.
Yeah, if this is his debut, good luck. We're going to need some of that aggression that you've apparently got, because they're going to be rushing Wilson all day long, I think.
Yeah, it's a massive, that's a massive behemoth defensive line. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, it's just, that's the battle's going to be won up front, yeah. On both sides of the ball, I think. But ultimately, this is just, in my opinion, a considerably better offense to anything we've faced thus far this season.
Yeah.
But hopefully, you know, our defense practicing against our offense in the week can set us up nicely. But if they, you know, if we go into this thinking that this is, you know, just one step up from what we faced before, we're going to be in for a rough outing, because these guys can play.
Yeah, most definitely. Right, we'll get on to it. The elephant in the room, worrying amount of people agreed with Dino, who posted it on Facebook, that he shouldn't play. But what to do with Russell Wilson? Your $20 million a year quarterback, your franchise, it's not a debate, is it? Surely.
Surely we've all got one word answers to this, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. Ross?
Yes, he plays.
Yeah. Adam?
I'll expand it a bit and get it a bit ranty. If you don't want Wilson to play, then what you are saying is you accept a loss, because Boykin is not going to beat the Jets.
No. There were people who put, we'll just go 2-2 into the bye.
We'll just take that.
I don't know about you guys, but I really, really, really like home playoff games. And I really, really, really don't like road playoff games.
Yes.
And, you know, we have a great opportunity with Arizona a game back, Carolina a game back. Yeah, I mean, if Minnesota and Philadelphia win out, good luck to them. I'll take my chances going there on a road playoff game, because I think we'd beat them, you know, without problems, in my opinion. Especially with Minnesota playing in a dome now and not in the Arctic.
And Sam Bradford.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've got the experience to beat teams like that. We've got, you know, you've got to stay a game ahead of Arizona and Carolina as long as you can.
Yes.
Because those are the guys that we're going to be competing with at the back end of the season. You can't throw a game away in a 16-game season.
No, not even slightly. Obviously, not even going into a bye week on a loss. With how competitive this team is, it's going to linger. It's mentally, it's just not something that you want, even at this stage of the season. Obviously, as you say, I mean, what's Green Bay's record? Is it 2-1 as well?
2-1 as well, yeah.
Yes, but you need to stay, because let's be honest, Philadelphia's start is unbelievable. To do what they did to Pittsburgh on Sunday is really impressive, but Carson Wentz is a rookie. It doesn't matter how good he could be. There's going to be a wall approaching sooner rather than later. And as you say, Sam Bradford is one hit away from being injured, as he is every week and every snap. And if that happens, Sean Hilliard is not going to keep, as good as that defense again is looking in Minnesota with Mike Zimmer, they're not going to be able to maintain it. So you need to stay in striking distance of them two. And as Adam says, you need to stay ahead of all the Carolinas, because they're going to find their groove eventually. You'd expect Arizona to, although Carson Palmer is starting to show the signs of a decline. But yeah, Ross?
Yeah, it's vitally important, more so than just staying. We just need to stay ahead of the Cardinals all season. I'll take our chances in competing with like the Eagles, like you say, on the road, or the Vikings, but we need to win the West this year. We can't have Cardinals fans thinking they've got the superior team.
and also, if Russell Wilson should be able to put up a decent day, even with half one and a half legs or one knee or whatever. Yeah, because he can clearly do it, because he did it for most of the last 2 weeks. Obviously, the Rams game was a absolute shower, but we'll erase that from the memory, like Super Bowl 49. But Wilson should be good enough just throwing the ball to the players he's now got. Doug Baldwin is going to be Doug Baldwin. Jimmy Graham is... I mean, the Chiefs had, I think, a touchdown for Kelce. Their other two tight ends had 15, 20-yard catches as well. The tight end against the Jets is going to have fun. And when you Jimmy Graham and all the Gronkowski comparisons we mentioned earlier, he could be... The progression for Jimmy Graham is going to just continue against his team. Anything else with the Wilson debate, guys? Well, Blakov.
I think it's fair. Right,
that's the point. It shouldn't be a debate at all, to be honest.
No.
You haven't a $20 million quarterback.
No, if Boykin does start,
Chris Michael's in for a busy day, isn't he?
And CJ Spiller. Yeah. How much of a point swing do you think that would be?
Possibly a 14-point less, I think. I think Wilson gives you two touchdowns. I mean, Boykin looked all right, but yeah, it's a different question, isn't it, the Jets?
Yeah, as I said, Bevel is really good at playing these situations. Obviously, a couple of years ago, when we had him out there for the Raiders game, and we had you go back and look at the O-line at the start of that game and how small the playbook had to become for that game. And we still come out with a win. Obviously, the Raiders were pretty bad then. I think Bevel will earn his keep if Boykin is the guy who starts. But Pete Carroll said he'd be surprised if Wilson doesn't start. So this is just a bit of a mute question. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, if Wilson doesn't play, we lose. So you can talk about points from all you want. We're not going to win if Wilson doesn't play. So, you know, he's full practice on a Wednesday. Get out there on Sunday and get her done.
Yep, pretty much. Adam, come to you first with your one to watch on offense.
Oh, my one to watch on offense. I'm probably going to steal Ross's here, and I'm going to say Jimmy, because it is going to be the, you know, Wilson's not going to have as much time. He's going to have to trust his receivers to make plays for him. So I think Jimmy could have a big day.
Yeah, I'd agree. Ross?
Yeah, I said it earlier. It's Tyler Lockett's week this week. Even if he's slightly banged up, I still think he's got the pace to beat Revis and whoever the other cornerback is.
Marcus Gilchrist.
Yeah, he got beat quite
a bit
last week.
Yeah, he did. But yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Jimmy is going to be arguably the go-to above Doug, because they just didn't bother covering Chiefs tight ends last week. So if that continues, it'd be interesting. Gavin Hart mentioned, not Gavin Hart, Colin, I think it was, on the group mentioned it, the usage of Luke Wilson's fullback. It wasn't a fullback, it was a halfback apparently, because he was set to the side of the quarterback. So that's the difference in full and half, apparently. But I think how we use him, and Nick Vinette looks like he's going to be playing. He put a post on Instagram last night saying he can't wait 6 weeks of the grind, I think he said. So nice. How those three tight ends shake out. Brandon Williams may be a healthy scratch, though he seemed to have been doing a serviceable job as a blocker. But yeah, for me, I think it is all the tight ends with Vinette back in the fold. On defense, Russ?
I want to see a big week from Bennett, to be honest, because although obviously it's like Adam said earlier, we can't moan about this defense. The sack numbers, they were fairly poor last year, and they're not great this year. Frank Clark's our leading sacker. I want to see Bennett destroy Fitzpatrick.
And also, I think if he starts this week, he started last week, he'd be going up against James Carpenter. So that could be something to watch.
We know how good he is.
Well, he's to be fair, he's played quite well for
the Jets now. Yeah, true.
Worryingly, Adam.
I think Cam's going to bring the boom on Sunday. I think there's going to be someone like Vernon Davis equivalents getting knocked into next week.
Seferian Jenkins against Chancellor, that's a
I can't race. Imagine Seferian Jenkins is going to play with the lack of time he's going to have with them. And
no, he missed what? Practice yesterday as well.
Who is this tight end? Is it Kellen someone? I don't even know.
Anyway, I don't know.
Carry on.
Adam?
Yeah, so Chancellor's gonna give someone a good thwacking, I reckon.
What a word that is. For me, on defence, I think, as I keep saying, it's the linebackers against Matt Forte, particularly KJ Wright. KJ Wright was paid to defend wide receiver and running back screens. He's going to earn his money on Sunday, I think. I think if they come out with double-figure tackles, even a couple of maybe a fumble in there, an interception again from one of them, then the Seahawks are probably in good shape on the defensive side yet again. Predictions, Adam?
Oh, I'm really torn on this, but I have...
This is at Adam D. Nathan for any hate people want to put that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think we're going to lose 23-17.
Right, that's as a job position going for a third host on the podcast. And
the 10 a.m. thing is not to be underestimated.
No, not at all.
We're not quick starters in those games typically. It's a wounded animal team that are really going to be after us. We're not necessarily as healthy as we could be. In fact, this is probably the least healthy we'll be in the whole season. It just has a bad feeling kind of game to me.
Yeah, I'd agree, apart from the score, obviously. Ross?
17-14, Seahawks. Hauschka wins it. Last kick. I've seen the future, boys.
We've seen the future, and it's Hauschka.
Yeah.
For me, I think 24-20 to Seahawks. I think the Jets do have causes a few problems, so I think they're not going to be any worse on offense. Fitzpatrick's interceptions were just laughable. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he knows what he saw for some of them. The one where Derek Johnson returned for a pick six, I didn't even see a New York Jet in the vicinity.
No.
But he's not going to play like that, because, as I said, he's a serviceable quarterback, and they've got the good enough coaching and coaches at the Jets, and everything with the 10 a.m. start as well. It's going to be a slow start. But I think the Seahawks and the defense do enough to set up hobbled Russell Wilson to give Christian Michael a big day. Also, we need a turnover this game as well. But 24-20 for me. Any NFL, wider NFL and college observations, Adam? One in particular.
Well, I mean, it's the big one on Friday night with the Huskies taking on Stanford. If we can win that one, we're really going to be flying. Obviously, Oregon just bringing the lols week in, week out these days is great fun. And around the league, you have to be impressed with Carson Wentz. He's made some, you know, he just looks like a real, real player. Yeah. And credit to the Vikings for going 2-1 in three pretty tricky games, considering the woes they've got. That's a great win for them last week.
Yeah, to lose their starting quarterback and running back for the season and stand undefeated after facing a divisional team you don't usually beat and a Super Bowl team from the year on the road as well, which is, yeah, it's really impressive. We got Carson Wentz is very impressive. But the biggest thing in Philadelphia is how good their defense looks. Malcolm Jenkins is flying around like it's 2010 all over again. So college for me, obviously Friday night is massive for the Huskies. Oregon is hilarious. Drafting Seahawks is going to come back on this podcast next week because there was a player who I couldn't take my eyes off when I was watching him last Friday night, I think it was. And he apparently, I'd find out just before we start recording, is draft eligible for next year. But yeah, Oregon is hilarious as well because it didn't look like a touchdown. I think I'm not sure he got his foot down. Anything for you, wider NFL, Russ?
Yeah, the Browns are going to win their first game this week. They're playing the Redskins in Washington. They're going to win.
Yeah, talking of Redskins and last week, what is wrong with Odell Beckham? Like, is there something going on there? Cause
did you see that play where Josh Norman picked him up and carried him out of the end zone?
Yeah, but he couldn't react because the ref told him if you do anything, you're out of the game.
Exactly.
I mean, Adam is a focal point of Adam's army. Is there a problem with Odell?
No, Odell's the man. I feel a bit sorry for him because, honestly, I don't know why they don't throw the ball to him every single time to see what happens. Because I genuinely reckon they'd be better off if they just did that. I don't think they throw to him anywhere near enough. And, yeah, I understand about spreading it and not getting predictable, but you almost feel if you got predictable throwing to Beckham, you'd open up so many other areas of the field as opposed to the other way around, which is what they're trying to do. So a bit confusing, but hopefully a couple of touchdowns coming in for Odell for my fantasy team soon.
It was funny him losing a fight with a kicker's net, though, as well. You see that?
Yeah, it's just the blow-up. So, I mean, it's Josh Norman lives in his head for those games.
Yeah, he does.
It's
bizarre. And Josh Norman's rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make any sense. Next week's podcast will be coming to you around the same time. Depending on the day and time we record, the president of the chapter will be coming on as a guest. We will review week 4, enjoy the bye week and all that brings with it without the stresses of watching this team on a Sunday night. As I said, drafting Seahawks will be a second one. Just get your Mustangs ready. Plugs on Twitter, you can follow the chapter at Seahawkers UK and myself at @Stu_Court. Ross, Adam, Twitter, Podbean, iTunes.
Yeah, you can get us on iTunes, search for the Pedestrian Podcast and leave us a 5-star rating review. The more you do of those, the more visibility iTunes gives us. ThePedestrianPodcast.podbean.com is our website where you can download an MP3 if you don't like Apple, and there's quite a lot of you out there that don't. You can also donate to the show, and I want to thank the President for his donation last week, and I think he owes me another one this week for the little wager he made for Michael and Graham going over 100 yards each.
Huh, okay, well, you can chase that up with him yourself. Just like to thank, obviously, thank Gavin for coming on and sharing his point of view from inside Central Field this past Sunday. All the questions that were sent in on the thread, even if we did dismiss half of them. If you are going to the game this year and want to get involved, then get in touch over social media and all the sorts. Sharing the game day experience with UK12s who haven't had the chance to sample it for themselves is always cool and will give a different feel to the UK Seahawkers podcast and get those people on Skyscanner and StubHub within minutes of listening to the show, I'm sure. But yeah, thank you very much, and we'll catch you next week as the Seahawks enter their bye week.
Go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.